On this second day of February 2012 in San Diego, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by its followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Canto 11, Chapter 31, The Disappearance of Lord Sri Krishna, text number 7. Dividundabayo nedu petu sumanasash chakat Satyam Dharmo Dutir Bhume Kirti Shri Chanutam Yayu. Translation. As soon as Lord Sri Krishna left the earth, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. Kettle drums resounded in the heavens and flowers showered from the sky. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, all the demigods were jubilant because each one thought Lord Krishna was coming to his own planet. Interesting. All right, that's the whole purport, so I'm going to read a few more. Most of the demigods and other higher beings led by Brahma could not see Lord Krishna as he was entering his own abode, since he did not reveal his movements. But some of them did catch sight of him, and they were extremely amazed. Just as ordinary men cannot ascertain the path of a lightning bolt as it leaves a cloud, the demigods could not trace out the movements of Lord Krishna as he returned to his abode. Purport. The sudden movements of a lightning bolt are seen by the demigods, but not by human beings. Similarly, the sudden departure of Lord Krishna could be understood by the Lord's intimate associates in the spiritual sky, but not by the demigods. Next text. A few of the demigods, however, notably Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, could ascertain how the Lord's mystic power was working. And thus they became astonished. All the demigods praised the Lord's mystic power and then returned to their own planets. Purport. Although the demigods are virtually omniscient within this universe, they could not understand the movements of Lord Krishna's mystic potency. Thus they were astonished. All right, we'll read the next one. My dear King, you should understand that the Supreme Lord's appearance and disappearance, which resemble those of embodied conditioned souls, are actually a show enacted by his illusory energy, just like the performance of an actor. After creating this universe, he enters into it, plays within it for some time, and at last winds it up. Then the Lord remains situated in his own transcendental glory, having ceased from the functions of cosmic manifestation. Purport. Can we make sure that kitchen door is closed? Thanks. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the so-called fight among the members of the Yadu dynasty was actually a display of the pastime potency of the Lord. Since Lord Krishna's personal associates are never subject to ordinary birth and death like conditioned souls. This being the case, certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is transcendental to material birth and death, as clearly stated in this verse. The word natasya, of an actor or magician, is significant here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells the following story of a certain magician who exhibits the trick of dying. Quote, in the front of a great king, a magician approaches a stack of valuable garments, jewels, coins, and so forth, all placed there by the king. Taking a jewel necklace, the magician tells the king, now I'm taking this necklace and you can't have it. And he makes the necklace disappear. Now I'm taking this gold coin, and you can't have it, he says, and makes the gold coin disappear. Next, challenging the king in the same way, the magician makes 7,000 horses disappear. Then the magician creates the illusion that the king's children, grandchildren, brothers, and other family members have attacked each other, and that nearly all are dead from the violent quarrel. The king hears the magician speaking and at the same time observes these things taking place before him as he sits in the great assembly hall. Then the magician says, O king, I no longer wish to live. Just as I have studied magic, so also by the mercy of the lotus feet of my guru, I have learned the mystic meditation of yoga. One is supposed to give up one's body while meditating in a holy place. And since you have performed so many pious activities, you are a holy place yourself. Therefore, I shall now give up my body. Thus speaking, the magician sits down in the proper yoga posture, fixes himself in pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, and becomes silent. A moment later, a fire generated from his trance blazes forth out of his body and burns it to ashes. Then all the wives of the magician, distraught with lamentation, enter into that fire. 3 or 4 days later, after the magician has returned to his own province, he sends one of his daughters to the king. The daughter tells him, "O king, I've just come to your place, to your palace, bringing along with me invisibly all your sons, grandsons, and brothers in good health, along with all the jewels and other items given by you. Please, therefore, give me whatever you consider fitting remuneration for the wisdom of the magic that has been exhibited before you. In this way, even by ordinary magic, one can simulate birth and death." End of story. It is not difficult to understand, therefore, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although transcendental to the laws of nature, exhibits his illusory potency so that ordinary fools will think the Lord has left his body like a human being. Actually, Lord Krishna returned to his abode in his own eternal body, as confirmed throughout the Vedic literature. Om Gyanata Marandasya, Gyanandana Shalakaya, Chakshu Unmidatam Mena, Tasmai Shri Kadave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, here we have the aftermath of Krishna's leaving his body. We use the word disappearance, appearance and disappearance. Actually, we even use that for ordinary people, especially devotees. But the idea is that no one dies and no one is born. This is the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita. But sometimes we're manifest, sometimes we aren't. Manifest really means visible. Sometimes this whole material creation is manifest and sometimes it's unmanifest. Krishna mentions that in the Bhagavad Gita several places. That this whole manifestation is eternal in the sense that the energy is eternal, but it's not always visible to anyone's eyes. Sometimes it's drawn within the body of Krishna as Mahavishnu, and there's nothing there. And just Krishna is in his spiritual abode. And gradually, when the time is right, it manifests again. So Krishna, he's directing. He's like this word nata is nice. It's like an actor. The whole thing is a play. Krishna's completely in control. There's no moment in his lila, either in the spiritual world or when he manifested here on earth, when he's not doing something for a purpose. And the purpose is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam, that he wants to protect his devotees and enliven his devotees. He wants to reestablish Dharma when it becomes covered, or becomes disorganized or destroyed in this world. And he wants to curb down the miscreants, the demons who are trying to spread our Dharma and giving harassing the devotees. So, and in any one place or time of his lila in this world, one or more of those things is most prominent. When he's in his childhood, playing with his friends in the forest or dancing with the gopis, he's not really curbing down the demons. That's not his prominent thing. He's enlivening the devotees. He's enacting another reason mentioned in the Bhagavatam for his appearance. He says, "Madanugrahaya, anugrahaya bhaktanam, anugrahaya bhaktanam, manasam deyam astitaha, bhajati tadushi krida yashutva tatparobhave." That out of mercy for the devotees, I come and I exhibit my activities as in the human form, manasam deyam astitaha, just so that they can hear about them and become enlivened to surrender to me and to become devotees. So periodically he renews the memory of his pastimes. This is one of his motives for coming. So Krishna has accomplished all of these purposes in this 125 years that he was manifest, as recounted in the 10th canto, and now part of the 11th canto, or actually the whole 11th canto. This is the last chapter of the 11th canto. But So now the scheduled time for his leaving is there. He's planned it out, and he's leaving. And it's interesting, the first verse we read, just a note on this, you don't see it because you don't have the book in hand, but he mentioned that he left earth with truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty. Those are all capitalized. They're personalities who are personified. They're in charge of those things. This is mentioned also in the Gita, in that Nakshatrana Mahamshashi verse, I think it's 10:20, where Krishna identifies himself with these women, right? Among women, I am, Dhriti is there, faithfulness, actually firmness, faithfulness. Kirti is there, Shri is there, beauty and fame. So just like for knowledge, or especially speaking power, Saraswati is there, otherwise known as Vak. Vak means words. To say anything intelligently, you need the mercy of this demigoddess. She empowers your speech, and she can take it away also. Suddenly you can't say anything, you say speak gibberish. Similarly, there are personalities behind these qualities. They're personified, and they all went with Krishna. You know, when he went back, he was taking truth, religion, faithfulness. And as we mentioned yesterday, that although he certainly took those with him, they accompanied him, he left the Bhagavatam. He arranged for the Bhagavatam to be spoken shortly after his departure. And the Bhagavatam, Krishna, Sodamo, Pakate, Dharma, Gyanadibhisaha, when Krishna went back to his abode, taking with him Dharma and Gyan, religion and knowledge, in order to help the benighted souls of this age. Benighted is a good word. It means those who are blind. This is what you were blind because of darkness. You know? So it's the sun comes up after the nighttime to enlighten. So the Bhagavatam has risen just like the sun for the benefit of all the souls of this age. So this whole philosophy, Lord Chaitanya came in order to propagate Bhagavat philosophy. And there's so much in the Bhagavatam about the chanting. In fact, the very last verse has the word Sankirtan in it. Did you know that? Last instructions. Yes, the Sankirtanam, yes. Sankirtanam, yes, sir. How does it go? Sarva Papa Manashana. Yeah, I offer my obeisances unto him whose Sankirtan, congregational chanting, destroys all sin. And who's bowing down to whom, all auspicious, something like that. So, this very dramatic disappearance. Now, what are the demigods? How do they react? Well, first of all, there's a great celebration. You know, this is a classic. The flowers come down, heavenly flowers are flown down, and the dundubis, the kettle drums are playing. It doesn't mention it here, but we can assume that the apsaras are dancing, the gandharvas are singing, this is all going on. This is kind of a humorous thing about from Sridhar Swami. They're all hoping that he's going to visit their planet, but he doesn't. He goes straight back, according to this. They caught sight of him as he was on his way back. Then this nice verse about the lightning bolt. Ordinary men cannot see the path of a lightning bolt. Lightning bolt is just so fast, it just kind of explodes from the sky, you know. But here it says the gods can see it, the demigods can see it. So they could not trace out Lord Krishna's movements. So this is another, you know, Krishna appears by his own will and he disappears by his own will. Sometimes it's very sudden, you know. There's a manifestation of Krishna's mercy or a manifestation of Krishna. He appears. You know, who could predict Prabhupada's appearance on these shores? You know, but he came. You know, no one really, he was practically invisible. You know, no one knew that he was coming, as a few people. Certainly no one on this side of the ocean. And yet he comes. And in the same way, Krishna appears, and then he disappears by his own will. There's oftentimes you'll find, I remember Narada Muni and also Dhruva, they're meditating, and suddenly Krishna's not there in the heart anymore. And it's very shocking. And he appears on Garuda or something, you know. And then, you know, there's a tremendous outpouring of ecstasy and prayers usually. So that's another part of his independence, is that when and where and how he will appear and manifest as completely under his will. Now, at the same time, he responds. You remember how this all began, beginning of the 10th canto. There was an overabundance of demons on the earth. And Bhumi, the goddess of the earth, felt distressed. She's crying, you know. She's religion personified, but she's burdened by all of these irreligious demons. And so she appeals to Brahma. And Brahma takes a possession of all the demigods to the shore of the ocean of milk and Shweta Dweep. And he meditates, and then he gets a message. He gets, in the heart. Yeah, Krishna enlightens him. What's going to happen? Don't worry. I'm coming soon. All of you now, take birth in these different families to prepare the way. And so the demigods were jubilant, and then they expanded, and they took birth, And then they were gone with the Yadu dynasty. And that's explained in this one of these purports here. How it's all a display of Krishna's pastime potency. And so, this it's just like the performance of an actor. So Krishna's, by his internal potency, his Leela Shakti and his Yoga Maya potency, all these things were arranged. Now, when we begin devotional service, and sincerely, we begin to come under the control of that internal energy. This is a very nice understanding that we need to have, is that we are, because of our nature as Prakriti, Shakti, and because of our minuteness, we are always under control. We always serve. Our choice, we have minute independence, more so than the animals. They don't have the intelligence. They're simply under control of what they call instinct, previous conditioning. They're just moving up the different species until they come to the human platform. When the higher intelligence gives us the opportunity in the right association to make the critical choice of which energy we are going to be controlled by, what we're going to serve. Now, Maya's trick is that even though you become a complete servant, or let's say a slave of Maya, of lust, anger, greed, illusion, three modes of nature, you think you're independent. That's part of the illusion. But in the internal energy, if you serve Krishna and his devotees and his will, to make it short, then you're consciously a servant. Let me put it this way. In entering the house of bhakti, to take that up, you have to consciously take up that role of a servant. In the higher realms, Yogamaya takes over, and you can forget that you're a servant. You think you're Krishna's equal friend or even his mother or controller. That's also by Krishna's will. That's the law of love. He agrees to be controlled. He volunteers to be controlled by love because it's his pleasure. But that's way up there. Right now, we need to make that firm decision to renounce our service and slavery to the external energy and take up the service under the internal energy, under Krishna's will, as the master. He's the master, we're the servant. That's the basic principle of bhakti. So when we do that, then we begin to enter into Krishna's lila. It's like the Sankirtan movement. This is all Lord Chaitanya's lila. We're part of that. We go out dancing and chanting. We're not fully aware of what we're doing, but somewhat aware. And we're taking part in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. This is what he wants. This is where he takes pleasure. We're trying to be good servants of Lord Chaitanya and taking part. And because we're doing that and hearing the holy name and chanting, we're also feeling little drops of bliss every so often. Right? It's not alienating. But it's lila. In other words, it's voluntary. There's nobody forcing us to do that. There's nobody forcing Lord Chaitanya. He's completely independent. And he's Krishna. So we're like entering into the pastime. Pastime means something voluntarily done. Not something you have to do. To try to think that our activities in the conditioned life here is some kind of pastime is completely foolishness. We're forced at every moment. You have to eat, you have to excrete, you have to breathe. You have to get old and you have to die. Nobody's independent in that regard. But as a spirit soul, you can freely connect with the Supreme Spirit and take part. Yes, take part eventually, eternally, in this wonderful play. Play in both senses of the word. There's the actor, supreme actor, and also it's voluntary and it's simply for fun. That's the ultimate goal of life. But we have to be completely fixed in our subordinate position. Then everything happens like that. So this idea is very, you know, so he shows a show. It's a show enacted by his illusory energy. And that includes his appearance and disappearance and all these things. And we'll hear, you know, sometimes it's quite amazing to hear about some of these Leela avatars, just like Varaha, you know. Voluntarily, he agrees to take the form of a boar, you know, a hog, in order for a certain pastime. It's called a Leela avatar. Because the earth was down at the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean in the mud. So what's the best thing to root out a nice globe? You know, a boar's snout. So he took that and got that in there. He also fought with Aranyaksha. So Krishna takes the form also that's just suitable for a certain purpose that he wants. The Sringadev, you know, couldn't be a man, couldn't be an animal because he had to preserve Brahma's, you know, benedictions. The half man, half lion, you know, and there's all, a whole other list. Couldn't be the day, couldn't be the night, or it had to be the twilight. Not inside or outside, okay, on the threshold. You know, so all of these things just to preserve his servant's benedictions, but still... He killed the big demon. So then there's this whole pastime of the magician. And, interesting. So, I've never seen a magician like that, but it's quite a... the idea is that Maya is also a great magician. You know, she's also pulling all these tricks. You know, the biggest trick is to convince us that somehow we can be happy in this... In this material world, this is like the first thing you have to wake up from. The Bhagavatam kind of has an introduction in the first canto, and then kind of officially begins in the second canto again. And right at the beginning, Pete, stay with us. As he describes this illusion, you know, that everyone is in. Deha patikadatradushu atma sainyeshvasatsapi tesham pramatto nidanam pashyan apina pashyati. Everyone in this world, it's in a fearful condition. Right? You grow up, I mean, it's constantly frightened as a little kid. There's always someone bigger than you, you know. And then when you grow up, you realize that, yeah, this whole police, you know, the police are bigger than me. That, you know, in other words, you're never all-powerful. You're always, you need help, right? You need soldiers, you need defense. And so you take shelter of the body. Yeah, build it up. You know, now I know karate, I'm good, you know, and I can defend, you know. Right. So deha, then you have your expansions, your children, your wife, your bank balance, your insurance policy, whatever, you know, your country, right? That will defend you. So he calls these the fallible soldiers. Now, it's dangerous. In other words, it's one thing to feel helpless and then, you know, call out upon Krishna, call out about the actual shelter. But the problem is we feel that we're safe in a dangerous situation. There's no real safety. So that's the situation. But even though people see that, who doesn't know, you know, that the body eventually breaks down? Who doesn't know that the children grow up and go away and they're not going to help you? You know, everyone's seen that. We all know our grandfather, great-grandfather, they died. They also thought that they would be, you know. So he says, Pashyanapi Napashyati. This is one of these little phrases I'm kind of giving you. Pashyanapi Napashyati. Though seeing, you don't see. You may physically see, but it doesn't really enter into and change your behavior. So that's what Maya does. She convinces us of things that are not really true. It's a big advertising campaign, you know, that this body is a source of pleasure, that I can enjoy with her, he thinks I can enjoy with him, you know, forever, happily ever after. There's no happily ever after, except in the spiritual world. So, but just see, you know, here we are in the middle of, you know, this financial cataclysm, right? But, you know, there's so much trouble, and yet the same things are going on. You know, people are still walking around the mall, going deeper into debt, you know. The banks are still gambling with everybody's money, right? They're destroying the atmosphere, thinking that it won't hurt me. You know, I'll somehow be free. It's all disillusion. It's incredible. So how do we break out of that? We have to, somebody needs to intervene and make this point. This is the spiritual master. With the truth. We actually have to be confronted with the truth. And sometimes it's very painful. That's why so many times this is really a movement for younger people who haven't made a total commitment, you know, to this illusory idea. Because the older you are, you've put so much of your life energy and your hopes into the illusion. It's very painful to have that ripped away. So that everything you've dedicated your life to is completely useless. No one wants to hear that. So they make up some philosophy, or they just ignore you or whatever. But that's the actual truth. You can see it. So to break out of that, we need, first of all, knowledge. We need someone to tell us the truth. And then we need a process by which we can actually realize it and live it. Otherwise, we may know it today and forget it tomorrow. You know? Just like our philosophy is, we came from the spiritual world. We knew it then, but now look at us. We're all covered over for birth after birth, millions of births. So it's not a given that once you know it, you'll keep knowing it. You have to act on the knowledge. You have to act on the knowledge, and then more and more knowledge is given to you, you know, and you're confirmed. I was discussing last night this famous ladder from faith to love, from shraddha to prema. And it's a wonderful description by Rupa Goswami of the unfolding of the soul in relation to Krishna. You know, it begins with a little bit of faith so that you come into the association of devotees who are living this truth and who can give you knowledge, real knowledge. And if you're in that association and it somehow the seed is planted and you're receptive to it, then the next thing is you have to do something. It's not just a armchair philosophy. Bhajan, bhajana kriya. Kriya means activity, chiefly chanting the holy name. And as soon as you start chanting the holy name, then in conjunction with association receiving the knowledge, then your faith becomes deeper because you're having direct experience, you know, and more and more and more. And it's really a question of purification. So that's the blessing. That's the real mercy of the great acharyas and the sadhus and the mahatmas and everyone else, you know, all the others, is that they give their association and they give knowledge through the words, which can enter into your heart and change your whole existence, your life. You know. And that's why we sing every morning, Samsara Dhavanada Loko Tranaya, that the spiritual master is pulling us out of this dangerous ocean of birth and death. You know, it's an ocean of mercy and full of good qualities. And therefore, as I've mentioned other times, we should feel gratitude. And that gratitude should manifest in the service attitude. The attitude of gratitude. Sorry, I've heard that before. It's not mine. But it really is essential. You know, and from there, you know, then the sprout is coming, then we can water it. You know, that's the idea. So, let's see. This was a spontaneous class, so forgive me if it's a little bit uneven. Okay, so where were we here? Oh, that's the next verse, okay. Yeah, hearing about Krishna's pastimes and hearing his name, all of the wonderful things, this is reminding us. Again, going back to that verse, I encourage devotees to learn this phrase, Hading tadiha katana shrutabham labda smati yachadiparam advana. This is the last two lines of the verse. It talks about getting good association, giving a bad association, developing the sword of knowledge to cut off illusion, and hearing the activities, such as this disappearance of Krishna, you regain your memory. This is encouraging. It's that deep down inside, you know, our consciousness, we can remember that we've experienced these things, the relationship with Krishna is there. But we've totally forgotten it. But that memory can be revived by hearing of those eternal activities again and again. Not once, but again and again, regularly. Nityam Bhagavat, the Savior. And by that revival of memory, it's kind of like coming out of a long, long state of amnesia, you know, in which you've taken on a whole new identity or identities that aren't you, and you never quite feel right, you know. You know, like we're right, you know, because it's not us. These are other bodies. These are the alien bodies, you know. Talk about aliens. We're all aliens, you know. So that's liberation. Giving up all identification with these bodies and be situated in our real form of spiritual form, which is constituted of devotional service. The service is there, you know. We have a certain set of hands, eyes, legs, everything else by which we can serve Krishna. That's how we rediscover that body, by engaging in devotional service. Any discussion on these few points about the disappearance of Krishna? Just like a dancing actor. All right, I'll give you one more verse then. It's Nata. Barha pidam natavadavapu karanayo karanikaram. Bimbran vasak kanaka kapisham vajayanting chamalam. Randran ve nor adadasudhiya purihyan gopa vrinda vrinda danyam sapadadamanam pravishad gita kirti. With lovely peacock plume upon his head and fragrant flower placed upon each ear, he enters Burgess Woods with graceful tread, a handsome dancing actor without peer. His gold and yellow raiment brightly glows, his splendid garland reaches to his knees, and from his luscious lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with charming melodies. As Krishna thus begins his blissful day with coward friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies Vrindavan's forest way with fine impressions of his lotus feet. So there you have it, dancing actor, ending Vrindavan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.